So diving right in today, you've shared some really interesting articles, all coming out of Christian Culture News.
That's right.
And they focus on, well, pretty significant move in Wisconsin, it seems. Lutheran bishops taking a stand against Christian nationalism.
Yes, a very clear stance.
What jumped out at me right away is that tension, you know, faith, politics, they're colliding. And these religious leaders, they clearly feel they have to step in.
Mm-hmm.
So our mission for this deep dive, really, is to understand why. Why are they doing this now? And what does it actually mean for religious liberty in the U.S.? For everyone.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we talk about Christian nationalism, it's important to get what it is. It's more than just Christians being patriotic.
Right.
The sources, they describe it as a socio-political ideology. It sort of fuses Christian beliefs with American national identity.
Fuses them how? Like, what does that look like practically?
Well, it suggests that the way we interpret our laws, our policies, it should all be done through a specifically Christian lens. And what's really, potentially concerning, according to these sources, is the assumption behind it. Not just that America has lots of Christians, mm-hmm. but that America was fundamentally intended to be a Christian nation, almost like a divine design thing.
Right, like it's baked in from the start.
Exactly. Which then leads to the idea that, well, the country was founded on Christian principles and should actively keep reflecting them.
Okay, so if that's the main idea, this sort of foundational principle, mm-hmm. what beliefs actually flow from that? According to the articles, what would someone holding this view push for?
The sources flag a few key tenets. One is a really strong belief in America's like divine authority.
Official mission.
Yeah, that kind of thing. A God-given role. Another is the conviction that our moral compass, you know, as a society, should be guided by a very specific reading of Christian doctrine.
And that translates into government action.
Right. That our government, all levels, should actively reflect Christian values. And we see this pop up historically and even now with pushes for things like mandatory prayer in public schools.
Sure, I remember those debates.
Or, you know, putting up Christian symbols on government property, that sort of thing.
You know, thinking about this, it raises a really big question for me. If you genuinely believe the U.S. is meant to be Christian,
mm-hmm.
what does that mean for people who aren't? Or people who are Christian but don't share that specific interpretation?
That's exactly where the sources say the potential for, well, major social impact comes in.
How so?
This viewpoint, it can create a really divisive atmosphere. If the nation's identity is seen as inherently Christian,
then others are sort of pushed to the margins.
Exactly. It can lead to the marginalization of people with different beliefs or, you know, no religious beliefs at all. The sources suggest this causes friction.
Friction with who?
Well, with communities that really value the separation of church and state, which is there to protect everyone, right?
Yeah.
And also with groups advocating for minority rights, it's not just about different opinions. It can sort of create a hierarchy of who belongs.
Okay, so that brings us back to these Lutheran bishops in Wisconsin. For listeners maybe not familiar with church structures, who exactly are they? Why does their voice matter here?
Sure. So these bishops, they're spiritual leaders in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, the ELCA.
Okay.
And the sources point out this is a mainline Protestant denomination. They're known for emphasizing grace, inclusion,
mm-hmm.
and they have a long history of engaging with social justice issues. Their role as bishops, it's not just administrative. They have real ecclesiastical authority.
Meaning their words carry weight.
Yeah, significant weight. They're respected leaders, their statements, they matter to their congregations and often, you know, get noticed more broadly. When they speak on faith and public life, people listen.
And what specifically are they speaking out about here, according to the articles? What's the core worry with Christian nationalism?
Their main concern, and it's really clear in these sources, is this deep commitment to religious liberty for everyone.
No.
They see Christian nationalism as, frankly, a direct threat to that fundamental right.
How?
By potentially elevating one specific religious view above all others in the public square. So they're advocating for everyone's freedom, practice your faith. Or don't practice any faith without being pushed or discriminated against.
It sounds like their actions are really rooted in that principle.
Absolutely. Protecting that freedom seems to be the driving force.
Now, it's one thing to be concerned, but the articles also talk about specific actions they're taking. It's not just talk, right?
That's a really important point. It's not just rhetoric. The sources highlight how they're actively engaging with lawmakers.
In Wisconsin. or more broadly?
State level, certainly. Maybe federal, too.
Yeah.
And they're also working with different social organizations. They're not just preaching. They're trying to shape policies.
Policies aimed at what?
Policies they believe will protect civil rights and human dignity for everyone in Wisconsin. And importantly, they're explicitly standing against attempts to impose one narrow Christian interpretation on the whole public.
Do we have specific examples of this? I think the articles mentioned a resolution
okay.
from the Wisconsin Council of Churches.
Yes, that was a big step. The Council of Churches represents a pretty broad spectrum of Christian denominations there.
Okay.
And they passed a formal resolution. It explicitly calls out and denounces this mixing, this conflation of national identity and religious identity.
So a collective rejection of Christian nationalism's core idea.
Exactly. A powerful statement from a diverse Christian group.
And beyond that group resolution, the articles also mentioned open letters from individual bishops.
Mm-hmm.
What's the message there?
Yeah. Those letters, as the sources describe them, seem more personal. They're addressed to congregations, the wider public.
Mm.
And in them, the bishops really lay out their concerns about the potential harms of Christian nationalism. Very direct terms.
What kind of harms?
The dangers it poses to people of other faiths or no faith. But also, they argue, dangers to the principles of pluralism and tolerance themselves, things you need for a healthy, diverse society.
There's a moral argument, a theological one, too.
Precisely, an argument against the ideology itself.
It's also interesting, the response isn't just top-down statements. There's mention of community outreach programs. What's that about?
Right, they're taking it to the ground level, too. The bishops are initiating programs within their churches, but also reaching out more broadly.
To do what?
Educate people. Yeah, basically to educate folks about what Christian nationalism really entails. Trying to foster a better understanding of secular governance, you know, government staying neutral on religion.
And why religious liberty matters for everyone.
Exactly. Regardless of belief, these programs, they aim to create space for, like, thoughtful discussion about these really complex issues.
It really does keep circling back to religious liberty, doesn't it? That
yeah.
seems central.
Mm-hmm.
Can we just unpack that a bit more? Why is it considered so fundamental based on these sources?
Absolutely. The sources rightly frame it not just as a nice idea, but as a foundational right. It's right there in the First Amendment.
Born from historical struggles, right?
Yes, exactly. Its origins are tied to a history where people faced serious persecution for their beliefs. The whole point of the First Amendment's religion clauses was to stop the government setting up a state religion
uh-huh.
and to stop it interfering with people freely practicing their own faith. It's really about protecting individual conscience.
And it's not just history. The rise of Christian nationalism, as these bishops see it, makes defending religious liberty urgent now.
Precisely. In their view, and the analysis in these articles supports this, Christian nationalism becoming more prominent poses a significant threat to that freedom today.
How so, specifically?
Well, if a political ideology gains ground that essentially says to be truly American is to be this kind of Christian,
then anyone who doesn't fit that description becomes vulnerable.
Their freedom is inherently vulnerable, yes.
Yeah.
It can create a climate where their rights, even their sense of belonging, are chipped away at.
So, if that kind of national religious identity really takes hold, what are the potential real-world consequences for people outside that specific Christian viewpoint?
The sources suggest the consequences could be pretty serious and widespread. It can, unfortunately, foster an environment where discrimination and intolerance take root more easily.
Because the default assumption changes.
Kind of. If the prevailing idea suggests a true American is a certain kind of Christian, then others can get marginalized in subtle ways like social exclusion or, maybe more concerningly, in actual policy decisions that end up favoring one religious view.
Okay, let's shift to the reaction in Wisconsin. This stance by the bishops. It can't be getting a universally positive response, surely. What do the articles say about how people are reacting?
You're right. It's definitely mixed, which, you know, isn't too surprising given how deeply people hold beliefs around faith and country.
So who's supporting them?
There's definitely strong support. From congregants who share that commitment to religious liberty, separation of church and state, also from local community leaders who, maybe from a more secular standpoint, understand why constitutional rights matter.
Any other groups mentioned?
Yeah, it's interesting. Civil rights organizations are noted as applauding the bishop's stance. They see it as an important defense of diverse religious expression and minority rights.
But inevitably, there's pushback. Who's disagreeing, according to the sources?
The sources do mention discontent, yeah. mostly from more conservative segments, both within the religious community and probably outside it too.
Reflecting broader debates, I guess.
Absolutely. It mirrors the larger arguments happening across the U.S. about religion's role in public life. Some folks genuinely believe integrating Christian values more strongly into the nation is good, maybe even necessary.
So they'd see the bishop's stance as misguided.
Or maybe even harmful, yeah, undermining something they see as positive.
This disagreement must spark some, well, maybe difficult conversations within communities.
Oh, I'm sure it does. And this opposition really highlights how complex this is. People understand the faith-nation connection very differently.
So the bishop's actions force a conversation?
In a way, yes. It forces people to think about how you advocate for your own deeply held beliefs while also respecting and upholding the rights and dignity of everyone else in a pluralistic society, even those you fundamentally disagree with.
That's a tough balance.
It's a really challenging but totally crucial exercise. Balancing personal conviction with that sense of communal responsibility.
This also gets me thinking about how different faiths see religious liberty, especially with Christian nationalism as a backdrop. Do the articles touch on interfaith views?
They do give some insight there. For many mainstream Christian denominations, religious liberty is foundational, often seen as a God-given right for everyone.
But not all Christians agree on the specifics.
Well, as we've seen, there are different interpretations within Christianity about the right relationship between faith and nation. That makes the internal Christian conversations about religious freedom really important, too.
Okay, and what about perspectives from outside Christianity?
The sources offer some helpful glimpses. The Jewish tradition, for instance, with its long history often marked by persecution,
puts a high value on freedom from religious oppression.
Exactly. So any movement potentially leading to one religion dominating the public sphere is viewed with, you know, understandable concern.
And other faiths.
Similarly, many Muslim voices in the U.S. stress how vital it is to protect their rights, ensure they aren't marginalized by any kind of Christian dominance in public life.
Makes sense.
Even Buddhist teachings, which often emphasize tolerance and respectful coexistence, naturally align with the idea of freedom of belief for all.
So it sounds like even with very different theologies, there's a lot of common ground on valuing religious liberty. And maybe shared concern about something like Christian nationalism.
Precisely. That shared commitment to freedom of conscience, the right to believe or not believe without discrimination, it's a powerful basis for interfaith understanding and maybe even collaboration on protecting that liberty for everyone.
Which brings us right up to today. Clearly, protecting religious liberty isn't just a historical issue. What are the main hurdles it faces now, according to these articles?
Well, as we've been discussing, the rise and influence of Christian nationalism is presented as a key challenge.
Because it marginalizes.
Yeah, its tendency to prioritize one specific viewpoint can, intentionally or not, marginalize those who don't fit in. That creates real tensions in a diverse society like ours.
And these tensions aren't just social, are they? They're playing out legally, too.
That's right. The articles hint at the growing strain on the legal framework. Specifically, the First Amendment's religion clauses, free exercise and establishment.
How so?
We're seeing more court cases testing the boundaries. How do you accommodate religious belief in public life without infringing on others' rights or without seeming to endorse one religion over others? It's tricky.
And down at the community level, it sounds like these issues are driving deeper wedges.
Yeah, the sources suggest growing polarization, sometimes along theological lines. That makes it harder to have constructive dialogue, doesn't it? Harder to build understanding between different faith groups or between religious and non-religious people.
And ultimately, these are the kinds of issues our politicians and policymakers have to deal with constantly.
Absolutely. Legislators face this ongoing balancing act, protecting religious expression, which is fundamental, while also ensuring equality and fairness for all citizens, whatever their beliefs. Christian nationalism just adds another complex layer to that.
So as we kind of wrap up this deep dive,
looking
at these Wisconsin Lutheran bishops and their standing, it's clearly a really critical issue, huge implications. Their actions really highlight the role religious leaders can play in tackling these tough societal questions, advocating for principles that protect everyone's rights.
Yeah, and their core aim, as the sources frame it, is defending that crucial separation between church and state.
Which isn't about being anti-religion, right?
Not at all. It's about ensuring a level playing field, where all religious expressions are free and diverse beliefs are respected in the public square.
So for our listeners thinking about all this,
yeah,
how can people get involved? How can they participate in these conversations about faith and public life where they live?
Well, there are lots of ways, I suppose. Engaging respectfully in local forums, maybe. Supporting policies that promote inclusion.
Or just connecting with people from different backgrounds.
Yeah, definitely. Building those bridges. The power of just talking, honest dialogue shouldn't be
They
underestimated.
can bridge divides.
It really can. Meaningful conversations between people with different views are incredibly valuable for building understanding, especially on sensitive topics like this.
And maybe the first step is just awareness.
I think so. Deepening our own understanding of what religious liberty means, recognizing the challenges from ideologies like Christian nationalism, that helps us all be more informed participants.
And encourages support for voices defending these freedoms.
Right. The firm stance these Wisconsin bishops took, it's a powerful reminder, isn't it, that protecting religious expression is really a collective responsibility.
It takes ongoing vigilance.
And a willingness to speak up for everyone's right to believe freely.
Okay, so on that note, maybe a final thought for our listeners to take away. How can you, in your own life, practice and uphold your personal faith, if you have one, in a way that doesn't step on the rights and freedoms of others?
That's a great question.
What role can each of us play in fostering a society that truly respects the incredible diversity of conviction all around us? Something to mull over long after this deep dive ends.